go, Roberta.
We have to have one addition to the agenda. Welcome. This is my name is Roberta Willis. I'm the House Chair of the Higher Education Employment Advancement Committee. Joining me is Senator Bai, the Senate Chairperson of Higher Education. This is finally happening, and it's very exciting to see you all here. I think maybe the best thing to do at this point is to go around the room and introduce yourselves, if you would like to say something a little bit about. I know many of you, or all of you, have been appointed, been politically appointed, but when we drafted this bill, we put some very specific characteristics that we wanted represented on this planning commission. Just briefly to say, the original legislation was drafted in, I think, 2007. So this has been a long delivery date for me. And I'll let our Secretary of the State, Denise Merrill, address us at one point, because I always think of her as the mother of this concept, and I was just the midwife. So and so now we've had a very long delivery date, way past an elephant. So I will start by going around here to my right, and if you would introduce yourself. Oh, and if you're representing an agency, you may want to come up as well, because there are ex officio members here as well.
John Bennett, also a retired faculty member of the University of Connecticut. And at various times I was in the Office of Undergraduate Education and also a associate dean of engineering for academic affairs.
My name is Teresa McDonald. I'm currently a practicing attorney, but I did hang out my robe, so I do have them. I'm formerly at Sacred Heart University, independent institution, but I was there for 10 years, the director of the MBA program, and a faculty member. And I also have worked for Southern Virginia University in the Fort Worth and as their vice president of the
I'm Vagos Haji Michael, Fairfield University faculty now, recent former dean of the School of Engineering at Fairfield.
Good afternoon. I'm Judy Goldfarb,
And in my former, I'm currently retired, and in my former life I had an opportunity to innovate a number of projects to help people get through the college system and obtain their degrees.
Thank you very much. Very illustrious crew. And obviously there are other people on the list. Everyone should have the board member list and the appointment process in front of them, and you'll be able to also see who the other members are that weren't able to be here today. Senator Bai, did you want to say a few words before we get?
Well, I would just say hello. That was quite an impressive group, and I think exactly what Representative Merrill, now Secretary of State, and Representative Willis had in mind, and we're really excited that you're here, and we have a big college agenda in the state. It's really important for our future, and sounds like a lot of you have brought us to this future, but you'll help us see what's next. So I just thank you for your service, and I'll turn it back.
I'm going to turn it over to Denise Merrill, and she'll give you a little bit of the background and the history of how we got here today, her involvement nationally on this issue, and I thought it would be very important to hear her perspective and the genesis of this commission.
Well, thank you very much, and I am so pleased to see you all here. This is an incredibly important task, and I'm going to start with just talking about, I'm no longer involved, obviously, in the legislative process, but I'm still deeply interested in how we move forward in higher education. And I go back to when I was in the legislature, I chaired a national task force on what we called transforming higher education. And it's interesting that it was in 2006. I can't even imagine, you know, how long ago this was. And this was the reason we brought back the ideas from this task force, was to implement them in our states. And so I thought, as chair of the task force, the least I could do is try to make it happen in my own state. But as part of that effort, I had the opportunity to visit 5 to 10 states personally. We had speakers from all over the country. And it really sprang out of the deep sense, and you all have a copy of this report. I recommend it to you. It's very short. It is not your typical academic report. I'm proud of that. And we really struggled with the whole theme of the report, and the struggle is embodied in the actual first sentence, which says, "There is a crisis in American higher education." Now, it almost feels, even now, like a bit of an anachronism, because in some ways we've moved on a little bit, but we struggled with the idea that we shouldn't always be saying there's a crisis, you know, everything's terrible, scolding everyone, include the legislature, the academics, administrations, and so forth. But the truth is, that was how we felt at the time. I think we were being influenced by the work of Thomas Friedman at the time, The World is Flat. That was the big book everybody was reading at the time, you may recall. Again, we have sort of moved on a little bit, but those issues are still out there. And the basic thing, the basic premise, I think, of our work was that there was a lot of activity around higher education, lots of money being spent, and lots of change going on, but perhaps not in a direction that was helpful to the students of today. There was a recognition that students have changed, and I think there's a little bit of data in here about that sort of thing, but, you know, for example, it's clear that the student bodies most universities are serving now are not the same student bodies that they were 40 or 50 years ago, and that the models for higher education still to this day have not changed as dramatically as they perhaps need to. Now, of course, since 2006, some of that actually is changing. You're seeing a lot more, you know, thinking about online universities and all that sort of thing that is now happening. But we came up with a series of recommendations that states should do, starting with define clear state goals. And to this day, I don't think our state has done that. And I can say that having visited all the other states, many states did take our advice and did come up with a strategic plan for their educational systems. that built on the strengths that they had. And that's briefly, I think, what we need to do. You need to look around the state and see the deep reservoir of higher educational resources we have, the numerous institutions of all different varieties, and make sure that we're sort of matching up our resources with our need. And that's basically what a strategic plan is supposed to do. It's a really difficult job because everyone has the niche they want to be filling, if not their niche that they are filling. And there's a great deal of what we used to call mission creep. I don't know if we're still using that terminology, but you see a brilliant example of it this very day in this building. What are various institutions supposed to be doing to most clearly meet the goals of the state as defined? And I would submit we haven't even really defined those goals very clearly. So we came up with a series of recommendations that are very broad and give you plenty of places to work from. And there are examples around the country where other states have done this. Notably, I would say Maryland, for example. We went down and they made tremendous changes in the structure of their higher education system in Maryland about 4 or 5 years ago based on this report. And it was there are other states that have done it as well. And I think they have come up with a better system in many cases. There's no one model that works for everyone. What the first thing you see when you look around the country is every state's doing it a little differently. And in the end, I'm not sure it matters so much whether you have a board of higher education or a board of regents or what you have structurally, as much as how well you've defined what it is you want to do. And so I am delighted that finally we are going to try to take a look at this with the minds around this room. I would encourage you to be bold, because whatever you do will probably shake up existing ideas, and that's a good thing. I think we just really need to come up with some new ways of thinking about what we're all doing collectively. And if you can identify the strengths we have and the weaknesses, if you can hold institutions accountable, was one thing we talked a lot about, accountability, both student performance, all those issues that I know are still out there as well, and also recommit to access. I'm someone who grew up in California in the 1960s, and I always like to remind people that in 1965, there was no tuition at public institutions, zero. And when I say that now, people think I'm a communist. You know, it's like, what do you mean? You know, why shouldn't you have to pay for higher education? In those days, higher education was considered a public good, not a private good. And it was considered good for all of us if everyone went to college. There is still a deep thinking about the American public is still with you. They still think of this country as, you know, the best place on earth to get higher education, and that higher education really is the ticket to opportunity. I don't know how long we're going to be able to sustain that attitude, but at this point, you know, that is a real positive that we have with the American public. So now we just have to go back to that thinking and recommit ourselves to those ideals, I believe. So good luck. I will help any way I can. I certainly looked around the country a lot, and I would encourage you to do the same, because there's a lot of different ways to get there, and there are some states that are doing a very good job of planning ahead for the future. So, and thank you to Roberta and to Beth for making this happen, especially Roberta. We've been in this trench for a lot of years, so I'm really glad to see it's finally happening.
I want to thank you, Denise, and thank you for your leadership on this, because clearly, sadly, we should have done this a long time ago. It came up again and during the whole consolidation of our higher education systems, our community colleges with our state university systems and Charter Oak. And I was disappointed at the time that we did not have the strategic plan to lead us, that we were sort of going backwards, that we needed this group and this plan before we reorganized higher education. But that being said, politics being what it is, here we are today, and doing it a little bit backwards. But we are still flying blind in many respects in Connecticut. I've looked around the states I read a lot of the reports, and I really recommend looking at strategic plans that have been put together by other states. And when I go to national conferences, it's always interesting to me that the best practices that are being touted throughout the United States, different states, are usually from states that have done a strategic plan. It's not a coincidence. Tennessee, Kentucky, Maryland, Texas, all produced excellent documents. Some of them more, brief. I love the Texas plan. It really is succinct. It's well done. It's easy to read. It's easy for policymakers to implement. Some of them, like Maryland, I think was a little bit more academic. In terms of the structure of this group, I looked at other structures of other states. Maryland was a huge, I think there was 36 members of their strategic planning process. In talking to some of the experts around the country, they felt that maybe Maryland would have gotten more done had they been a smaller, more cohesive group. It was thought that a group of 15 would be ideal. The states that seemed to do a really good job kept with a number like that. The other piece that I was recommended to do from different higher ed experts throughout the United States said, try to, in Connecticut we have the political appointment process, but try to have the people coming to the table to be looking at this, not present stakeholders. You may have an expertise in a particular field, or you may come from UConn or Central or from the private universities, but you're no longer there. You can be their spokesperson, but you're not necessarily carrying the water for them anymore. And so that's really important, that piece, to have that expertise, but have that distance to be able to make some tough decisions. Now, we see this as an ongoing process with a short-term plan, 5-year, a 10-year. And I see it as something that is going to be an ongoing process for the state to keep this kind of a group functioning to really lead the way in higher education for the state of Connecticut. Employment needs change, fields change, technology change. How do we respond to that? I mean, when I did this bill, there was no iPad, there was no iPhone. It's a different world, in just a few years. So who knows what 5 years will bring us from now and how students will be learning. So, and the other thing to say is that it's so important in Connecticut to have a strategic planning process, because higher education, I don't want to sound elitist in Connecticut, but Connecticut really has always excelled in higher education. And from the information we've garnered from industry and companies out there and just across the board, have told us, and institutes of higher ed have told us that in Connecticut, more than 60% within the next 10 to 15 years, up to 70% of the students in the state of Connecticut will have to have some sort of post-secondary education. And I should also keep in mind that this is not just about higher ed. It really emphasizes post-secondary. So that is part of your charge, to look at post-secondary education. I think I've said enough at this point. I thought the first item of business, and this may be a little bit premature since we're just getting to know people, but we do need at least a temporary chair to convene the next meeting. So I don't know if any of you have spoken to one another or have had that conversation, but we need to start that conversation today. Joining us is Representative Tim Legette. He's the House Ranking Member on Higher Education. Welcome. Where was I? Oh, I know. John Hartnick, would you come up? John is from the Office of Legislative Management. In order to do your business, you need money, and you're going to need a consultant or consultants to aid you in your work. There has been money put in the budget for this purpose, and John can tell us a little bit about that process that we need to follow to get the help that you need. That's fine.
Thank you very much. I brought with me Sue Skeen, who's head of my budget and accounting, and Tina Moore, who heads up the legislative contracting as well. So in case there's any questions, I don't know how far we want to go today, but I can certainly give you a brief overview. We did have monies put into our budget this fiscal year to start the strategic planning process. We have our statutes require us to follow a certain protocol in developing an RFP, so we do need to talk probably in greater detail offline, but essentially what we need is a project owner, a scope of work, what are we looking to accomplish really, and then from there what we do is then we could work in developing evaluation criteria. We need an evaluation team. How are we going to do milestone payments? We need to figure all that out, and then ultimately we award a contract and we negotiate a final price. We get our deliverables and we get to work. I think the one thing that I've reminded Representative Willis about is the fact that we will have to deal with the time frame that's involved here, and I need to know that because right now this money is considered in lapsing funds, and we may have to take some action to continue it on into the next fiscal year. So that's it in a nutshell. I don't know if there's any specific items you'd like me to discuss or go over or go into greater detail.
Well, what I would be helpful to discuss with the group is there are not many people in the United States in higher education that specialize in doing these strategic plans. There's definitely people out there that have done it. You can look at the other state reports and see who the consultants are. It may only be a half a dozen companies that do this. So what I wanted to ask you, John, at one point, and it may not have been with you, we discussed that we really would put out a request for inquiry to find out, how does that work as opposed to a full-blown RFP?
Well, first off, ultimately we would have to do an RFP because the dollars involved, it exceeds $50,000, so we would really, well, actually $20,000 is our cutoff to go out to competitive bidding. But beyond that, typically the way we've done RFIs, the request for information, is if we don't know what we want, we ask for people to give us ideas. And then once we get the results of the RFI, then we turn that into an RFP. So it would elongate the process, but depending on if we don't feel we can gather enough information on our own, then certainly that is another step that we'd be happy to help you with.
I think that would be a really wise way to go on this because we would be reaching out to those organizations and individuals, consultants that do this, and hopefully getting their kind of feedback, and presumably some of the people that even helped to draft the strategic plan legislation. Senator Biden, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. Thank you, Representative Wills. I think looking around the table, my guess is there are people here who have employed highly skilled strategic planners while you were working in higher ed, or maybe not, but potentially. So if you know people and want to let us know that, that could be helpful. I think that one of the things that's really unique about Connecticut is our mix of public and private institutions. So when we go to a conference with people from Colorado, they say we have four private colleges in a state the size of Colorado. And so our mix is so unique because of the contribution of the private, the small nonprofit and larger nonprofit private colleges that, like all states, it will be unique, but our landscape is dependent on both the public and private mix. So I think it's going to take someone with a lot of skill to figure out what our strengths and weaknesses are and where our opportunities are as a state. So I don't know, as you all are listening, do you have any reaction or questions? I also wanted to make sure I recognize Representative Sawyer and Representative Mulroney are here from our higher ed committee.
I don't know why they're shy and resonant.
Come on up.
Not join us.
But this is a very popular committee at the legislature, I think, because so many of us, with over 40 in a state, we all have a college in our district, and we all see the economic impact of those universities.
How much is...
We have approximately $150,000.
We can find somebody, hopefully, for that. And if we don't spend it by the end of the fiscal year, we can have it lapse and continue that on for next year. And if need be, we will continue to do whatever, you know, we can to help you, you know, facilitate your work. This is very important to us, and your role is very important. And we want to do what we can to do that. So thank you, John. I think the idea of going forward with an inquiry and reaching out to some of the national folks and see what we get back would be great.
Okay, we'd be happy to help with that. We will need somebody to guide us as to what exactly we would be asking. So I could work with you offline on developing those criteria, and then we can publish that.
Okay, wonderful. Any other questions or comments? How would you like to handle electing a chair, a temporary chair, let's say? I know everybody jump up at what's it? Should we strong arm you privately? Maybe that's what we need to do. I do see some other people that Sharon Palmer is here, the Commissioner of Labor. She's very shy and reticent, knowing Sharon. And if you believe that, next to her is Jane Terliglio, who's... This is the old people corner. Jane is the Executive Director of the Office of Higher Education. And is there anybody else? I don't know if my glasses on. Oh, Judy. Judy Griman came in after introductions. Judy, do you want to say a few words as a spokesperson for the independents?
Happy to be here. I represent the 16 private nonprofit institutions in Connecticut. We are all over the state, and we are happy to participate in this.
Thank you. Well, hearing no other comments, we will set another meeting. Would you say this time works for you, works well, 3 o'clock on a – would you rather have a different time? Is that okay? Maybe somebody raise their hand. Who? Oh.
I gave the wrong signal.
Oh, you can. Okay. So 3 o'clock seems to work well. And if we did a meeting in a month, would that work well? Maybe at that point we will have some more information. We'll have already reached out to some consultants and started the process with John and the Office of Legislative Management. Yes.
Can I just ask for clarification on how the RFI process is going to work, and how would we filter names to whom if we had some suggestions of people that we would want to get notice of that?
You could send them to us, here, and then I could get them to John, if that would. John, is that, would you prefer it that way, or would you rather they came directly to you?
I think if you just send it into the chairs and they could forward it on to us, I think the largest part that we have to work on is just defining what we're looking for, and then what we typically do is go out and we will post this on our portal. And certainly we do, with all bids, if we know of providers that potentially could do this, we alert them to see the portal and see if they're interested in providing information or ultimately, in this case, information, but then eventually into a proposal. The one thing that I just want to caution everybody on is just with our guidelines in the state is that, you know, we don't want to compromise anybody from bidding. And so when we get to the RFP, that's why I think the RFI is probably a good way to go. Because once we develop an RFP, if a potential vendor helps us write the RFP, then we get into an ethical issue, and certainly we want to avoid that at all costs. But certainly during the RFI process, any input is welcome.
Just one thing to get your feedback about our next meeting. I'm sorry, this was mostly organizational. I hope you had that sense, but there are some things that we take for granted as chairs of higher ed, but you know, would you want some kind of review of critical issues in higher ed in Connecticut now, what the demographics of the state are, what we're looking at? Because it's sort of like we're going to build a house together, and we're going to hire a general contractor who has a lot of expertise, but you guys have the information about what the rooms need to be like and what the specs of that house need to be, but you have to have some background information. So maybe it would be helpful. I just threw out two things, you know, the critical issues facing Connecticut, and I think we've had some pretty incredible reports about the demographics of the state and why it's so important that we get more students through the higher ed system. So before we adjourn, do you have questions that you want us to make sure we address in our first sort of real meeting and before we bring the consultant on board? Go ahead.
Just a suggestion. There is a 2011 report by State of Connecticut Department of Higher Ed. It's called Higher Education Counts Achieving Results. I downloaded from the web. I think it would be good if you distributed this report to everybody. I found it very helpful.
Jeannie, could you get that out to everyone, email it out? That would be great. Or would you, is that emailing it is fine, electronic? Okay.
It's on the web. Absolutely. The link would be.
Okay, I will send them. Judy, you had a question?
Yeah, I have a couple of them. Thank you for the opportunity. I understand there's a current strategic plan. Is that something that's going to be totally disregarded or scrapping? Are there pieces in there that are appropriate for us to review?
That's a good question. That strategic plan is pretty old. Are you talking about the State Board of Regents? They just came out with a plan, is that?
No, if there's a new plan, is that something that we should look at? But I was probably referring to an older plan.
Yeah, no, we have something on the books that probably, I've been on this committee for 12 years, and it probably was in existence for years before that, maybe 95. I don't have anyone here from legislative research to, but I think it was a while. Judy, do you remember? I know what you're referring to. That is the Board of Regents. And that's just
Promotion,
for...
Board of Regents.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's... Right. The Board of Regents, which covers the 17 institutions, the four state universities, and the four and the 12 community colleges and Charter Oak, are in the process of drafting a strategic plan for them. Unlike you're looking at the whole landscape, private and public, so your charge is a little bit more global. And just in terms of mission, Denise had talked a little bit about this, but one of the things that struck me when I was first tackling this in 2007, 2008, was that Connecticut really came down to us as closing the achievement gap was the big challenge for the state of Connecticut, very similar to the plan that came out of Texas. The different states came up with different missions. But when I looked at the Texas plan, it seemed that their goals and their challenges in higher education, believe it or not, were pretty similar to the challenges that we face, you know, having some of the poorest cities and some of the wealthiest communities poses problems and challenges, you know, for our state. So there were other studies that I looked at back then, and I'd be glad to send those out to you. But as I said, it's been a long time since I looked at this really carefully. It's been a number of years, and there's different people around the table now, as you can see from, you know, listening from Denise, who has so much passion, and had so much passion that we needed to move on this for higher education. And it's a long time coming, overdue. We need to do it, and I want to. We didn't thank you. We really want to thank all of you for agreeing to do this, because this is a tremendous contribution to the state of Connecticut and our students. So I want to thank you on behalf of all of us here at the Connecticut General Assembly. Yes.
Senator Bai, could you just clarify some of what you meant by demographics? Are you talking about statistics and graduation rates?
Well,
or?
It's a great question. I think it's both, but I don't know if some of you have been at some of the economic development forums that have gone on around the state, and you look at, there's a gentleman from Connecticut Voices for Children who does an incredible layout of our current population, sort of where we'll be in 20 years, school success, college success, and it's pretty bleak. So it's sort of, that's what we want to turn around. So I was talking sort of general school demographics and population demographics. So that's what I was talking about. We also have a good bit of information from the Board of Regents, from our public institutions, because we've been doing a lot of work around completion. We can get those out to you. We can ask for sort of the most current graduation rates. We have a big issue with 60% of students showing up in need of remedial education when they get to college. Soon we're going to always call that developmental, and we're going to offer support in classes that are given credit, so we're moving in that direction. But so there are a host of issues. So what I was trying to get from the committee was, what are the issues as we start to think about this that you want background on? I think the past strategic plan is a great suggestion. The higher ed report is a great suggestion. We can get you the Board of Regents report that goes to Complete College America, which puts us in context with the rest of the country. I think that you might find that useful, so I can get you that. But I was just talking about, I think his name is Orlando Rodriguez, who does this really thorough look at the demographics of our state. And as higher ed chair, I know it really drives me to want to push more kids, you know, to actually get degrees with declining young and all, you know, young people, and we need the degrees for our economy. So that's what I was talking about.
Yes.
I'm a little worried about Texas because, as a higher educator and evolutionist, there are some things coming out of Texas that are a little more worrisome than the good things you've talked about.
Well, what's very interesting is that Texas came out of the gate with a great plan, and it got derailed by a governor. So they were on the right track.
Yeah.
They were making tremendous gains, and wrong leadership, the wrong time. So it's very sad that they really had one of the stronger documents, I thought. But in meeting with people from that state recently, they filled me in on how it's basically been blown up, all their work.
That was just a prelude to saying I think the things you suggested would really be helpful. The plans you have seen that you consider might provide a good framework for us to consider. would really be helpful because it helps to identify your conception of what the end product might look like.
Legislation, the way it was drafted, really picked out I stole from all their plans. So there's plagiarism is, you know, a compliment too. And so I looked at some of what the others did and tried to incorporate it into this. Now, the other thing to I should be clear about is if there are issues with the way it's drafted and this committee feels that they would like to change certain aspects of the law, we can do that. So don't feel locked in by what we wrote at all. Certainly it's a guide, gives you an idea of what we were thinking about at the time, but it's really just a beginning document. You know, some of the dates are going to have to be changed, obviously, because we've started later than anticipated. But basically, this is, you know, a framework that you can work with, but you're not locked into it.
And do you have in mind, I remember reading the dates in there, but they were, I think they passed.
Yeah, right. They pass when you start in 2007.
Yeah.
It's very hard to believe that it's now 2013. It's sort of like is mind-boggling. But, yeah, we'll have to, you know, once you've met and started working and worked with the consultant, you may have an idea when you would be ready to come forth with some recommendations. I mean, the idea at the time was that this body would meet, have a year under its belt, and then come before us with some, you know, basic direction that we could implement legislation on. And then have, as I said, short-term goals and then longer-range goals, and then being at some point be able to see what, you know, some of the outcomes are on policy changes. Because that's what it's about, too. It's like, implement this, but what are the outcomes as we move our institutions?
And is that still your kind of overall conception of the time frame?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
But, you know, we're flexible around here. If you felt for whatever reason that your consultant felt you weren't ready for prime time, that's fine, too. But we do would like to get something so we can implement things as you see the need arise. Yes.
Hi, I'm Lois Schneider.
Lois.
Who are we producing this report for? Who's the audience? I mean, obviously lots of people are going to be interested, but is there a few targets? And what kind of process, is there an approval process when we create the document? Then what happens with that?
The approval process is you. Okay, it's your document. You are the planning commission. You have the charge. Who it goes to? It should go to us, the legislature, policy makers. It should go to the governor's office. It should be a document that our Board of Regents, the University of Connecticut, and our private institutions, though we can't legislate them, but certainly hope that it helps guide them. And then our different agencies, Department of Labor, Department of Economic and Community Development, who else is on this ex officio? All of those agencies that would have involvement in either education, so your Department of Education, State Department of Education, because, you know, we do want to see that, you know, the whole issue of alignment K through 12, pre-K through 20, is that what we're saying? So those are all the challenges. You know, one of the other things I was just thinking of since we did this, there was no common core being talked about. And now, of course, you know, that's the law of the land, and that's where institutions are going in our across the nation. So it's a evolving field. And again, you know, all the institutions of higher education, your commissions, should be looking at your report as they draft their policies. That's why all those agencies are represented on this committee as ex officio members. So they can keep, and you can use them as a resource. For instance, Sharon Palmer's here, Department of Labor commissioner, and they have a great document that they presented to us. Sharon, that might be something to get out to the members of what the jobs are now in Connecticut, what the employment landscape looks like, what those jobs pay, those kinds of things that, you know, where the opportunities are. So what are our institutions of higher ed doing to meet those needs of the future?
Well, just to add on to that with an example, then I'll go to you, John. So last year we realized because of a quirk in the law, not so quirk, it's like a privacy information, but we couldn't share information among higher ed institutions and the Department of Labor. And this was something that we wanted to know, were students getting jobs who went through, you know, our system, where they're staying in Connecticut. And that could be something that can come out of your strategic planning, that this is a weakness. And so this committee would take up a bill, we did, and we passed it, but then the committees of cognizance would also respond with legislation to address some of the shortcomings that you found. So we expect that this report will inform our committee to a great extent for the next session about improvements we could make as we're moving toward more clear goals as an overall higher ed system, if that helps. And John, you had a question?
Let me just make a quick plug for an event that the Alliance is going to be hosting along with the Hartford Consortium for Higher Education. It's on April 15th, and we've got a representative from the Lumina Foundation that will be joining us. She'll be joined by a local panel as well to respond to her comments, but she's going to be talking about Lumina's new four-year strategic plan, and that plan is focused on what they've identified as a 23 million person shortfall in 2 and 4 year college graduates by 2025. So if anyone's interested in attending, I would encourage you to do so. You could register on our website at metrohartford.com. Lumina has done actually a very good job of assembling data, not unlike Orlando Rodriguez. And they do a very good state-by-state comparison, but maybe more importantly, they've also done a comparison of our states and this nation relative to other countries across the globe, and it's very good data. April 15th again.
Yes, I was out there last week, and that place is incredible, the amount of information they have. So we can get a hold of that. And
I'll forward you the a link.
That'd be awesome. Thanks. Thank you.
Tom Moore.
Hi, Tom.
Senator Bai, you mentioned that data and that data. I'm curious if we've looked at our students that are leaving our high schools, where they're going, and mm-hmm. who we're losing to other states, and what that looks like, and if those people ever, in fact, come back. And I know it speaks to what Senator Bai just said, but of the people that we attract from other states to our universities, are they staying after they graduate, or are they going back to their home states, and what percentages, and what is there?
Or other states, yeah.
That is something that we've been looking at. I know the independent colleges, I think you track that, Judy, for your institutions, or some do. How many stay, the incoming, and our independents attract a lot of, obviously, out-of-state students come to New England and to Connecticut to go to some of our most prestigious institutions, and they stay.
We are, so many do, and many of our institutions have a sense of, you know, of how many do, both in-state and out-of-state students stay. There's also, won't be quite ready, but there's a pilot currently going on with Board of Regents, student data, the Department of Labor, and the K-12 system. So we'll have that link, and the private colleges have decided to participate in that data system. I mean, it's in the very early stages, but the Board of Regents pilot, I think, is happening this. There will be some part of the pilot that will happen by August. So I think as we move forward, there will be lots more data around where are students going in this state and are they working in this state.
Well, those are all the challenges and information that, you know, we'll be looking at on this committee. Yes.
As we move forward, I suspect we would need to share information among members of the committee. Would your the technical people set up a listserv for us?
It would be extremely helpful if we can. She's disappeared, but we will ask her to do that.
Well, very well.
Yes. I think we have everyone's email on this. In fact, people may want to check their contact information, make sure it's all correct with the pager. So you should have Denise's report on transforming higher education to start with. You all should have a copy of the statute, though this may not be, I'm going to check to see if this is the final one we did. So, and this is the list here. So if you look at that. I am going, if any, yes.
I just wanted to check a little bit. Of course, I'll know more once I've read some of these reports and get some of these extra information and check with some of the states. But the strategic plan is not simply about numbers of graduates or numbers of students that stay or whatever, but it's without getting into some sort of standardized testing, which I'm certainly not recommending or even thinking about. There ought to be some considerations on how higher education or post-secondary education can, in fact, interface better with industry and with business in this state to, in fact, do a better job so that it's not just numbers, which tends to have its own issues if you set it that way, but I hope it's quality of the graduates as well. And I'm just throwing it out as to, I would hope that would be part of the process.
Definitely. Thank you so much. And that certainly in the charge on the statute is aligning industry and our graduates. Yes.
It would be useful if, given that we're only going to meet once a month, it would be useful if we could have some sort of online communication ability so that once documents are released or shared with the committee members, that the committee members could comment on them. I think there's a lot of vehicles you can use. One's called Basecamp. We use it at the Alliance, and it's a great way to share information and for folks to comment in between meetings. So I'd recommend that we do that. I assume that somebody here could set that up. It's very easy.
Again, the next step, you know, of this group will be to select a chair, and I hope you'll consider it. If you don't want to volunteer in front of all of us, if someone wants to shoot us an email to say this is something that I'd be interested in, or even if you were interested in being a temporary chair until we get our ducks in order, that would be most appreciated. Thank you, everyone, for coming here today. It's a pleasure to meet you.